exciting day, Friday. Paris Podcast, Max and Stacey, the truth about markets. Oh, I saw the Economist magazine over at the newsstand. I just couldn't pick it up. I'm teasing myself.
Why? It's on the cover.
I didn't even look.
You didn't even look at the cover?
It's a little game I play. I let it seduce me.
Wow.
Showing me a little thigh, so to speak.
You're so French.
I just see it there nestled in with the Guardian and the Independent and the Herald Tribune and the FT. And I think, I wonder what's in there this week, my little darling.
You've become so un-American. You don't just consume. You take your time and have pleasure with your consumption.
Then I cried myself to sleep last night.
Why?
Well, one of the problems of doing this show is actually seeing things the way they are.
Yeah.
It had me all choked up and crying. all balled up in a fetal position.
I know.
So,
Well, there was a shocking story we found last night.
Well, there are a few shocking stories. The one that I am referring to, the one that got me all fucking teary-eyed, was, it got me into this ecology game to begin with back in the year 2000. What got me really interested in the environment was reading the reports coming out of the insurance industry that said that global warming, according to the insurance industry, was real and man-made.
Yeah.
And that's when I got interested in it, because up until then, it seemed more, a situation, a problem that would be happening in 100 years' time.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't a problem that was going to affect me in my lifetime, or certainly not in the next 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
But kept reading these insurance reports, and every 6 months or so, General Reinsurance or various big multi-Swiss reinsurance, they'd come out with a new report saying, the atmosphere is heating up, the poles are melting. And then today in the Financial Times, they're talking about the fact, and I'm sure a lot of people saw this story this week, that in fact the ice caps are melting at 14%, something like that, last year.
Yeah, 8 times the speed it was melting at the year before, and last year the Arctic lost 14% of its permanent ice cover.
Right.
There are seasonal fluctuations on the edges, on the margins,
mm-hmm.
but the solid core, it lost 14% of it last year.
Mm. Yeah. And, of course, the reason for all this is the feedback loops.
Mm-hmm.
The feedback loops.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, when the ice melts, it exposes the dark or black water. And then the sunlight comes in, and it doesn't reflect off the white snow. It just gets sucked into the black sea and warms it up even faster.
Mm-hmm.
And the Financial Times is saying the effects of climate change will be felt all over the world. And we're not talking about it happening in the middle of the century. We're talking about it happening right now. They mentioned the Arctic sea ice melting. The Greenland, the ice sheet, appears to be melting much faster than models predicted. Meltwater creates fissures that help break up the ice. It also drains the bottom of the ice, where it lubricates the flow of glaciers, accelerating their progress into the sea. Then you've got glaciers elsewhere. Melting could hit both agricultural and the availability of fresh water. About the 1 billion people from California to India rely on glacial melt for water. As glacier melting accelerates, they could suffer first floods, then droughts. And you've got the permafrost. The permanently frozen layer of soil in icy regions is melting in Siberia, raising the fears that it may trigger other effects. And you've got the carbon cycle. As soils warm, the biological activity in them increases. Decomposition increases. It releases methane. You add the cow farts. We talk about the cow farts all the time. The need to raise cows to chop them up, put them into McDonald's hamburgers. You need a lot of cows for that. Of course, they eat a lot, and they emit a lot of methane. You got the Amazon. Global warming could lead to less rainfall in the forest. Other effects, hurricanes are increasing intensity. Because the oceans are warming up, the oceans are also becoming more acidic, which can kill marine life, which they're rotting out there in the sea, which increases the global warming, climate change gases. And so the parts per million, this is the number, you know, that I think I first saw on the Greenpeace.org website, you know, the world CO2 concentration in the atmosphere, parts per million.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying that there's a certain inertia associated with this. Once you get past 370 or 380 or maybe 400 parts per million, there's no turning back. You know, once a pickle, never a cucumber. You can't put the climate change genie back in the bottle. You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. So they got a nice chart here showing that it looks like it's at about 390. I remember when we started doing this show, it was at 360.
Yeah.
So just during the course of doing this show, it went from 360 to 390. So extrapolating that number, we're going to be well past 400 by this time next year, which means we're in terminal global warming glacial melt phase, and which means that our days as a species are numbered. But I don't want to get too depressed about it because I know that people have mortgages to pay and they don't want to get all screwed up in the head.
Well, following on that, though, and this leads back into the markets, is there was a study released by the Tyndale Center for Climate Change.
Yeah.
And they said drastic action is needed if Britain is to have any chance of avoiding catastrophic climate change. The study concludes that a 90% cut in emissions is needed by 2050. But the report lambasts successive governments for misleading the public on what has been achieved and what needs to be done.
Mm.
So this goes back into the markets, how the governments are constantly misleading you and thus creating disasters behind you that you don't understand the cause of where they have come from. The Tyndale Center says that in all these Tony Blair achievements and climate change objectives, he's not including aviation or shipping. So if you include those, then UK carbon emissions have not fallen at all since 1990.
Right.
Tony Blair claims that they have fallen, but they haven't if you include everything in the equation. This is what we talk about that they do with GDP numbers, unemployment numbers, productivity numbers, any numbers that they decide that doesn't go well with their propaganda they want to put out there, their positive spin, they just exclude it.
That's right, honey. They just all, you know, the mother of all maligned statistics is the inflation number.
Mm-hmm.
I realized that yesterday once again. I had the same epiphany again. What happens when you have the same epiphany over and over and over? I think it means you're psychotic.
Yeah, I was just going to say that's a sign of insanity.
I had the same epiphany again. You know, this happened to me once during the 1980s.
What, you went crazy?
Well, I realized once I was standing in the shower.
Oh, my God.
Shampooing my hair.
Mm-hmm.
And I got trapped in a cat's bin. I got trapped in a mind warp where I couldn't remember if I had just shampooed my hair a second ago.
Oh, that happens to me all the time.
Oh, that's normal?
Yeah, honey. That's only happened to you once.
You had this experience?
Yeah, I have that like once a week.
Oh, well, I feel better then. Well, everything's fine. The climate's not, it's not, there's no problems. Everything's great. I'm feeling 10 feet tall.
But
where was I? Oh, yeah, inflation. All right, forget about what I just said, because I'm now having, like, massive deja vu.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. So, inflation, oh yeah. What was I? I was reading George Will. Some alert listener sent a link to George Will.
Some alert listener. It was PK&J.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I've lost it.
Honey,
I completely lost it. I told you. I was just crying all night thinking about those poor penguins and those polar bears falling into the sea.
Well, the penguins are in the Antarctic. Okay, they didn't say the Antarctic is falling.
What are you, a racist? What are you, a penguin?
But, honey, you've...
All you see is black. You don't see the white, do you?
Honey, what are you talking about? You were having blackouts yesterday. That's why I was saying black.
Okay. Well, there's melting.
There's melting in the Arctic.
So PKJ, yeah, they sent me this link, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, George will. Yeah, George will. George will. I didn't realize it was a PKJ. Oh, yeah. Well, they sent this George will story, and then George will. They're talking about Walmart, and you know, Walmart is the centerpiece of this debate about whether the glass is half full or half empty in America. What's that, honey? I see you with your finger up.
Do you want to explain that George Will is arguing that Walmart and Coca-Cola are good for the economy?
I was about to get there. I was trying to set it up, but feel free to jump right in.
I thought you were just going to your answer.
No, I was. I thought I'd give a little context.
Oh, my God.
So, anyway, George Will, who's... you know, I mean, he's got a bias, right? You know, he's got a bow tie, and he's got a bias.
Mm-hmm.
Which reminds me, I used to wear a bow tie.
Uh-huh.
Again, back in the 80s, I had my bow tie period.
You did not.
I did. I wore a bow tie for a while.
You are such a ponce.
I was at that time. You know, like anything else, it starts off innocuous enough, and then, you know, within a year, you're wearing, you know, ridiculous bow ties.
Mm-hmm.
And then that ended, and I went back to the Brooks Brothers, you know, classic stripy ties.
Yeah, that's better.
So anyway, George Will, he's got a bias, you know. He's a conservative. He's a conservative commentator, and he's trying to defend the moral rectitude and conservative values of America. And occasionally, he'll write a book about baseball to prove that he's just a regular old guy. Yeah, I like to go to the ball game and eat a Frank. Yeah, that's right. I'm a regular guy.
To eat Frank? You mean a Frank?
And he eats Frank. He's a cannibal.
That's not a normal guy, right? Did he really fall into some black hole?
He's a normal cannibal.
You mean a Frankfurter?
A Frankfurter. Hot dog.
Yeah. Okay.
Hot dog. Get your hot dog. Hot dog. That reminds me of another story. I used to go to the Madison Square Garden and watch the Rangers play in the late 60s.
Mm-hmm. You ate Frank there?
No, but something stuck with me. I was sitting there. I was about 8 or 9 years old, and I'm watching the game. The Rangers, you know, like Ed Jockman and Terry Sawchuk and Brad Park and Rod Gilbert and Vic Catfield. You know, some of you listeners may be with me on this one. And in the distance, you hear some guy saying, "Ebihi, ebihi."
What?
"Ebihi, ebihi." And I'm looking around. I'm saying, "What is going on out there?" "Ebihi, ebihi." And as it gets closer and closer, he starts to slow down a little bit. "A beer here, a beer here. A beer here, a beer here. A beer here." So you got this beer salesman approaching you, like on the savannah of junk food in the mass audience at the Madison Square Garden, appearing just as a sound bite in the distance. "Ebihi, ebihi." And then arriving right there at your seat selling beers.
Wow.
But for some reason those three little sounds, "Ebihi," it just stuck with me for almost 40 years now.
Yeah.
Whenever I'm actually crawled up in a fetal position, I flash back to things like that. That's what my life is made up of, these types of moments, of non sequiturs and fragments and threads and bits of cloth. And when you put them together, it's a complete waste. I mean, it's a glorious, fantastic, thank God I'm alive moment.
Honey, I'm sure everybody will write in and say, "Wow, I have those moments too, all the time. My whole day is made up of non sequiturs."
You're just an apologist for the listeners.
But honey, you're not exceptional. Well, you are. You're exceptional on one hand, but everybody has distorted realities like that every day.
Yeah, but
which is why you can sell them anything. Which is why you can sell people anything.
Mm-hmm.
Into one of those black holes.
Well,
Coca-Cola
I'll tell you, what's
goes.
Being sold is this inflation number.
Mm-hmm.
It's being sold to the American public at being, what, 2.5%?
Yeah.
And this is the mighty flaw in George Will's argument. So PKJ, send over this article, George Will, defending Walmart and Coca-Cola. And he's talking about why they are the bedrock of the U.S. economy. And it spins on a couple of things. Productivity. And basically productivity is what he's talking about. But the productivity, what is productivity? The definition of productivity. You see, this is what I'm saying. It's the inflation is the mother of all misstatements by the U.S. Statistical Government Office and Bureau of Statistics. Productivity is output per hour, basically, per person. Output is, in other words, you could say it's also GDP.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they say. Output is GDP. GDP is consumption. Mm-hmm. The government-issued consumption or GDP number is, quote-unquote, adjusted for inflation.
Yep.
Now, this number that they give us, GDP growth, is, quote-unquote, high because when you take out the, quote-unquote, inflation number, it's low, which results in this higher post-inflation-adjusted productivity number or GDP number slash productivity number. So the only way you can come up with that number is if you say that inflation is running at 2.5%. And the only way you can say that inflation is running at 2.5% is if you say that, well, we're not going to include housing. We're not going to include energy. We're only going to give you what's called the core rate of inflation. We're not going to include those other factors into this number. Now, people who are actually living in this world know that when they go to the store and they're buying food or they're going to fill up their gas tank and buying gas, that year-on-year inflation is running at a lot more than 2.5%. And so George Will's argument is the foundation of it is on one very basic piece of misstated information, the inflation number. And I wrote George Will an email on this, and they immediately got back a form mail from his office thanking me for the email and saying that he'll be happy to get to all of his many emails at some point. But I do not, you see, this is the beautiful part about being a pundit in America. When you want to argue for the policies of the current administration, you can pull out any number of these fake numbers to buttress your argument. And it's very difficult for Paul Krugman, for example, in the New York Times, because every time he points out that these numbers are wrong or that the government is lying about Iraq or that the government is lying about this or that or the other thing, then you've got the entire Fox propaganda machine kicking in and calling, saying he's unpatriotic, he's a slime ball, he's an enemy of the people, you know, he should be stoned to death. So there's no reasonable debate. So you've got this whole business of, it's, you know, the government's saying, trust us, give us your faith. We are the only ones with access to this data. We no longer publish a lot of this data. We don't publish M3, the aggregate money supply numbers anymore. We don't publish what the traders are doing anymore. We don't publish what Goldman Sachs is doing with the derivative markets, with the Sumitomo Bank, with the Federal Reserve Bank. We don't publish any of that stuff. That's all kept in the back room for your security. It's all for your security. We're really concerned about your security, so we're not going to give you any of this information because if you recall, you know, dig deep, think deeply, remember back. Yes, remember when you were living as a serf? Remember how safe you felt and the king had all the information and you were just an indentured servant? Didn't you feel better back then? Well, that's what we're trying to get back to now because, God forbid, you have any information. And inflation is the key around which that whole argument is faulty.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to blog on that today maybe and put it up there and put it on this thing as an adjunct to that thing to show that the cross-referencing with the internal argument makes sense given the macro situation. Yeah. Hello?
Yeah, but nobody understands inflation, so that's why it's easy to steal from them.
Well, basically, I'm a dope.
You're a dope?
No, seriously, if I just stayed in my little Westchester bubble and continued down my little Wall Street path, I could be borrowing money from the bank at 1% or 2% or less and have amassed a $1 billion fortune by now. But for some godforsaken reason, I decided that, especially in the last 5 years, that borrowing money at these ridiculously cheap rates to perpetrate this neoliberal model that puts profits over people is melting the ice caps and killing everybody. I took that seriously. I decided that this was a trend that was actually going to catch people's attention, that there might be actually wholesale rejection of global species-wide suicide. Boy, was I wrong.
Well, you could be on in Wall Street manipulating the markets against the population. But then one day, you don't want to get caught on the wrong side of revolution, because that's what always happens once the population figures this out. It's happened every time before, anyway. We don't know. America might have achieved the impossible, where all other empires failed. They might have achieved a population with no brain.
Well, let's see what's happening in the global insurrection against corporate occupation. As you know,
okay,
there are outbreaks of defiance around the world.
Mm-hmm.
There have been the Timothy McVeighs, the Columbine shootings, Hezbollah, Hamas, Palestinian uprisings, the rise of Nelson Mandela. This is all basically part of the same global insurrection against corporate occupation.
Oh, my God. You just put Timothy McVeigh and Nelson Mandela into one group.
They're all connected. They are oppressed.
Mm-hmm.
Except in Timothy McVeigh's case, he expressed his oppressed angst by acting out ragefully.
Uh-huh.
Nelson Mandela, being a different type of a human being, expressed his outrage at being oppressed by staging, you know, an epic, self-denying, civil disobedience type, you know, campaign.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But they're basically oppressed. And what we have here is a continuation of this. A man believed to be behind the shooting rampage at a Montreal college that killed one person and wounded 19 others before he was slain by police said on his blog in his name that he liked to play an internet game called Columbine Shootings.
Mm-hmm.
The gunman who opened fire at Dawson College on Wednesday was Kim Veer Gill, 25, of Laval, near Montreal, a police official said. What's this? He goes to Gill University. He's 25 years old. He's one of those career students.
Well, that's young by German standards. Germans go to school until they're like 35. University.
Six shooting victims remained in critical condition, including two in extremely critical condition.
Mm-hmm.
This is the result of governments in the UK and the US and Canada and Australia who are completely obsessed with murder.
Exactly. But because it's a copyright cartel selling these sort of video games, it's okay. But Donald Rumsfeld says all the time that this evil ideology of Al-Qaeda is spreading via the Al-Qaeda videos, which is why he has a problem with Al Jazeera. He says by showing these videos, it taints the mind of the susceptible. And yet this kid can play Columbine video game for hours on end?
Well, as we pointed out yesterday, the fundamentalist Buddhism, and Buddhists and the fundamentalist Hindus, they draw as their inspiration Bush and Blair.
Yeah.
Not Al-Qaeda.
Exactly. And Coca-Cola, by the way, the guy said. The Buddhist militant monk said.
Well, they're angry against Coca-Cola and Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
Because these corporations are part of this global corporate occupation. And, of course, there's a huge response. And guys like George Will, who's, you know, pundit for hire, will very articulately spell out the reasons why Walmart and Coca-Cola are net beneficial to society. However, at the root of his argument is a concept called productivity, which is based on faulty math.
Mm-hmm.
So, unfortunately, his argument doesn't hold water. The wealth and income gaps, you see, they're saying that Walmart, you know, is not really screwing things up. Walmart's the biggest employer in America. It's like a $400 billion company. They import Chinese goods to sell cheap, while at the same time allowing for the exportation of American jobs to China, which puts pressure on American wages. So you save 20 cents to shop at Walmart, you lose 40 cents in your wages. Net-net, your standard of living is decreasing, but the people who are financing this globalization are running away with the ball, becoming multi-billionaires on your back, and this is resulting in quite a vicious class war that we haven't seen in quite some time. And you got Hank Paulson over there now, who's trying to. Here's my prediction: Hank Paulson, after he gets finished with his meeting with those Chinese officials this week, will cut a deal where we will see a deal between China and America.
Mm-hmm.
Some kind of deal. Like, we're going to give them Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Sally Mae in exchange for readjusting the currency peg. There's going to be some deal. I can smell it. So anyway, according to this Financial Times article, how do you square this with your story there with George Will apologizing for Walmart? Now, here's a UK paper, the Financial Times.
Mm-hmm.
America suffered the biggest fall in optimism. A survey reveals a widening gap in rich and poor. Cheery American optimism seems to have hit a rough patch. Just under half of U.S. adults rate the quality of life they expect to be leading 5 years from now higher than the quality of life, according to a poll released yesterday by the Pew Research. The finding contrasts with 61% 4 years ago, making the sharpest downturn in personal optimism in more than 40 years.
Well, that seems to be a lagging indicator. I mean, it's about time, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this is the people in America know they can feel the truth there. They're being hoodwinked, and they're losing traction in this economy due to the incredibly large, monolithic, monopolistic, price-fixing conglomerates
mm-hmm.
like Walmart, Coca-Cola, Microsoft, etc. So they feel it. They have no outlet for their displeasure, where do they go? Where do they go? They can't go to the voting machine. They just had some primaries in America. They found that the Diebold voting machines, the electronic voting machines, they found, again, huge problems in the primaries past Tuesday in several districts. Huge problems. They've done nothing to cure those Diebold machines.
No, and Princeton University just came out with that report basically showing you how to hack one, and that it basically takes less than 1 minute to hack a Diebold voting machine.
So they're not doing anything to make these elections fair. So so where do people go to express if they want to take the government in a new direction, the people? Where do they go? The voting process has been shut off from them. So where do they go? What do they do?
They go play video games.
It's a pressure cooker. It's a pressure cooker.
Yeah.
Things are pressurizing. Plus you add on top of that the stress of watching the polar ice caps melt in real time.
Mm-hmm.
And hundreds of millions of climate change and global warming immigrants displaced. Plus you watched in real time the U.S. government's abandonment of 500,000 Americans post-Katrina. Then you, the pressure cooker is just getting more and more intense, it would seem to me.
Well, this is another story along those lines, is that widening gap between the rich and poor in America. This is a perfect explanation. This is a perfect analogy of how this happens. According to the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency for the United States and their quarterly derivative fact sheet, that sounds like great reading, doesn't it?
I looked at that the other day.
Well, they claim that J.P. Morgan Chase's derivative book grew by $5.5 trillion over 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the U.S. economy is $11 trillion.
Right.
So within... they took 50% of the U.S. economy within one quarter.
Mm-hmm.
This was $84.6 billion per day in new business. They were basically using this to manipulate the natural gas and gold and silver markets.
Right.
So where's the free market? And in the case of something like natural gas and silver, which are actually used in everyday life, natural gas is now at a record low. Due to this J.P. Morgan's creating 50% of the U.S. economy in one quarter for this trick
mm-hmm.
of manipulating the price of natural gas down. Of course, that disincentivizes the producers of natural gas who are really suffering inflation in the real world with wages, the price of steel, the price of other commodities. It disincentivizes them to actually source new natural gas supplies, to provide natural gas supplies. So as the writer of this story, Rob Kirby on financialsense.com, he says like he's just keeping his fingers crossed, though he likes the lower price for his natural gas bill. He's just keeping his fingers crossed that the supply lasts through winter.
Well, there's another one of these words. We talked about productivity.
Mm-hmm.
The word is derivative.
Yeah.
A derivative is debt. And what it means when you create derivatives, it means that you're extracting wealth from the economy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people are aware of the concept of remortgaging their house and extracting wealth to go spend stuff.
Yeah.
Well, as you say, the U.S. economy is like a $13 trillion house.
Mm-hmm.
And what J.P. Morgan did was they extracted $5 trillion in debt.
In 3 months.
In 3 months.
One bank.
Now, the debt, of course, has attached to it interest payments.
Mm-hmm.
There's a liability there. What they're banking on is that if they can use the money that they're taking out of the U.S. economy in the form of a debt extraction, they can use that money to attack the commodity complex, including the precious metals, drive those prices down, and to put the focus back on the intangible markets, which include the stock market. The stock market's now one trading day away from hitting a new all-time high.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and coincidentally, we're only a few weeks away from these November elections.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've observed this for 20 years, and this goes back to the plunge protection team and everything else we talk about in terms of the federal government being a market player. When you get into an election season, it's very helpful to the incumbents if they can engineer a rally. So stock market rally between now and November looks pretty assuredly that will be the case.
Mm-hmm.
How do they engineer that rally? By taking out tons of loans against the U.S. economy, which has the effect of two things: destabilizing the U.S. economy, because all that money being extracted, of course, eventually, like money that evaporates and goes into clouds, the clouds eventually break open and we have rain. When that happens in the financial world, it's called inflation. When all that money eventually finds its way back into the system, then look for a loss of purchasing power and a vicious backlash. Now, you know, I mean, it looks like once again, the banks and around the world are going to be able to engineer this attack on commodities and reinflation of stock prices. It looks to me like this is going to happen for the next 2 or 3 weeks, or up until the November election, which will bring with that the ability for this administration to further stick a needle into civil rights, Constitution, Bill of Rights, and pass new laws. They want to create a parallel government that bypasses the Supreme Court to be able to identify anyone that's disagreeing with them, or anyone who says anything bad about a corporation, or any journalist who's saying anything bad about any administration official. They can label them as an enemy combatant and basically shut them down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, put them under house arrest. You don't have to put them in Guantanamo Bay. Just shut them down. Shut off their, just spy on them. You have warrantless spying, so they have no ability to communicate with the outside world. They are got a GPS monitor shoved up their sphincter, basically, and they're on the grid.
But you also see, because remember we've noted before that the gold market, just the gold market alone, for example, is worth like $2.5 trillion.
Uh-huh.
So J.P. Morgan they're having to use $5.5 trillion in just 3 months to keep the price down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's requiring $20 trillion a year to keep a $2 trillion market down.
That's right, because all the many trillions that were originated in the last 5 years have to be refinanced.
And why does it take this much? Because why are they doing this? Why are they shorting the market like that? In order to create fear. It's like the war on terror. It's like the red code, blue code, yellow code, orange code thing. You know, they seem to just love to trigger panic, whether it's in the financial markets or the political economy. They always want you to be panicked, and you don't understand why the forces are that some market is dropping suddenly or rising suddenly. They engineer those as well. So you get very panicky and you put all your faith into these market gods of the stockbrokers or the Hank Paulsons of the world.
Yeah, well, as you said, they can manipulate it up as well as down. And in this case, we're talking about not them bringing in fear to justify an invasion, for example.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about them engineering hope
mm-hmm.
to justify another stolen election.
Exactly. Yeah. They engineer down the commodities market because that's the real world. and they don't want you to understand the inflation in the real world. They engineer up the fake good assets like stock market. So your pension fund looks like it's going up in value.
Well, I mean, this is what we can look forward to. Markets go up through into the November election. Republicans maintain control across the board.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're going to need to put in all these new laws that give them dictatorial power. Easiest way to do that, engineer a big crash. So now people are scared to death.
Mm-hmm. And of course, as this Rob Kirby on this this story about J.P. Morgan Chase's derivatives contract mentions of, you know, when this all crashes, you're going to want answers, right? Well, as he notes, you're not going to get answers from J.P. Morgan because, of course, the price of natural gas can be considered a national security issue. And as we know, John Negroponte has been handed executive authority to squash any SEC investigation of any company, which could be J.P. Morgan Chase.
Yeah. There's a completely opaque system going on there in the financial markets.
Yep.
Just like they say one of the root causes of obesity is that there's an opaque quality to the food markets. People don't know anything about food anymore. They don't know where it comes from, how it's grown, what the interaction is with the body. It's all pre-processed, pre-packaged. It's taken in the microwave. You know, so who sent us the... Oh, yeah. We got... Joe Bag of Donuts up there in Northern Europe sent us a link. I just found this link. It took me a while.
Uh-huh.
But it's a link to some site that showcases new food products.
Yeah.
Talking about hot dogs before?
Yeah.
They got a product which is a hot dog that comes in the bun, and you put both the hot dog and the bun into the microwave. And apparently the process of taking the hot dog out of the microwave and placing it into a bun is too much work.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a new product that allows you to put both in the microwave so you can take that whole thing out and start eating it. Yeah, and the second item was something that was shocking. It was from a Jimmy Dean Sausages company. We're part of this item.
I just got shivers.
It's a sausage link that's wrapped in a chocolate chip maple syrup drenched pancake on a stick. Pancake wrap sausage link on a stick.
But we know all those manufactured foods aren't actually really food, so it's not even a real sausage or a real pancake or real chocolate chips.
Probably not even a real stick.
What do you think it is?
It's probably just like some recycled Chinese dissidents.
Oh, yeah, probably.
They put it in there. That's how they're getting rid of them.
Wow.
So they sell these things. So people look at that, and when you put that in your mouth, it's like swallowing formaldehyde. You know, you're embalming yourself. Forget about suicide bombers. You're a suicide consumer. That's what we say when you say suicide consumption. People are all upset about these suicide bombers. They blow themselves up right away. Well, if you eat that stuff, you're blowing yourself up over the course of 5 years. Literally, you become a 300-pound gigantosaur waddling around, eating pancake-wrapped sausage on a stick with chocolate chips.
I don't know why my little Johnny's so fat.
You know, and there's people, I'm sure, will look at this like breakfast. Oh, mm-hmm. I had a pancakes and sausage on a stick for breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, why don't you put molten lava up your a-hole and call that breakfast? You know, what's going on in that head, in that gray stuff in between your ears? Oh, my God. So, let's see. Oh, apparently the Pope's upset the Muslims.
Yeah, he called them basically evil.
He
said there's something wrong with their people, that they're always turning to violence.
Well, as we learned on that TV show, Fundamentalism, this is completely a non-starter here. It's not... Mm-hmm. This violence, fundamentalist violence, is not exclusive to the Muslim community.
No.
It's actually, they're the late in the game. You see it first in America. The Americans really introduced fundamentalism into the world.
Mm-hmm.
But with the issuance of these texts, The Fundamentals, and the Scopes Trial of 1925, which gave the religious right license in America to secede from democracy and create their own voting bloc to put in laws that are anathema to the democratic process. Then it got picked up by other groups, including Muslim groups. They were imitating American Bible Belt. And because it's such an obvious link, the American Bible Belt don't call themselves fundamentalists anymore. They call themselves evangelicals to try to distance themselves from what they did, what they wrought with their Scopes trial insistence that evolution is wrong, Darwinism is wrong, creationism is right. The best way to live your life is to look at a 2,000-year-old book, lift it line for line as a literal translation, and don't think of any intermediary thought processes that might be germane to what allegorically is being stated in the book. Forget the priests, forget the rabbis, forget religious leaders. Just print up your own Bible, extract anything you want, and justify anything you do.
Well, George Bush's base wants a Christian nation. They want the Bible in the White House. They want the Bible in schools. And George Bush only this past weekend in his weekly radio address warned the American population that Osama bin Laden, he said, wants a Muslim world. He wants a Muslim nation. He wants Muslim law. Uh-huh. Well, that's exactly what George Bush's base says, but Christian law.
So Coca-Cola says.
Exactly.
That's what McDonald's says. That's what Starbucks says. That's what Nike says. We want a Starbucks world.
Yeah.
We want a McDonald's world. Yeah. Muslims are saying, no, we want a Muslim world. The Hindus are saying, we want a Hindu world.
It's just brand competition.
It's totally brand competition. In a secular world, there would be some rules. In a fundamentalist world, it's all out, you know, it's becoming just violent.
Mm-hmm.
And secularism being tossed out the window, and you're just a street brawl, going back to the hockey games I saw as a kid.
Uh-huh. Oh.
You know, eventually it just becomes a street brawl. You know, violence takes over, and they say, to hell with the rules. This is basically what's happening to global economy. It's becoming, who was that guy in the Philadelphia Flyers? Who was such a, what do they call these guys, the hitmen? His name was Clark.
Mm-hmm. I don't watch hockey, honey.
Yeah, he used to come out there and just beat up people. They won the Stanley Cup there for 1 or 2 years, and you know that was their game. This is what everyone's trying to be: this Philadelphia Flyers in global politics now.
Yeah.
You know, it works for a year or two, and then it doesn't work. Now, what happens is once you eviscerate your society and economy, trying to be the world's most sadistic, rule-breaking psychopath. You can't go back. See, this is, America's losing 200 years of goodwill.
Well, as we've seen in watching any history program that the BBC makes about past empires or past great countries, every single one of them has come apart and fallen and collapsed because of this very thing, of engaging in warfare, and it becomes more and more sadistic and more fanatical and obsessive, and they just throw their entire history and their entire economy under the bus.
Mm-hmm.
Every single time, almost every population you can think of that comes up, that falls, has done so because of this.
They just get lazy. Why teach your kids, you know, 18 years in school so that they can become educated?
Mm-hmm.
When, you know, we should just cut them off from access to any knowledge and get them buying stuff right away.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Sacrificing this generation for your immediate profits, which ultimately is causing ecological devastation and sacrificing the entire species for your immediate profits. And that's the crisis of the day. And it's creating a global phenomenon where people are reverting ultimately back to fundamentalism. And it's completely wrong for the Pope to say this is specific to Muslim Islam. It's not. It's happening in the Buddhists. It's happening with the Hindus. It's happening with the Americans, of course, plus Islam. Everyone's reverting back to this.
Well, we won't mention the Inquisition either, okay? Okay, Pope?
Yeah, well, the Pope, what about that Inquisition thing, dude? You know, so, well, there you have it. I don't know what else to say, really.
Well, let's fall back into another black hole.
Let's go back into the wormhole, the wormosphere. Oh, I'll tell you one thing I looked at yesterday, which is kind of interesting.
What's that?
It's called Viral...
Viral Video.
ViralVideo.com.
Uh-huh.
So this is just more on the same theme where this is now an index of free video that pulls from Google, YouTube, and other sources. So now I used to go to viralvideo.com, and I can spend, you know, 20 minutes on that thing every day.
Yeah.
That's 20 minutes I'm not spending buying DVDs or buying downloads.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like a dig.com for videos. So it's like the most, it ranks the most talked about, most passed around videos on the internet.
Right. So it's just a convenience for me to get this free user-generated content. You know, it goes back to Richard Parsons' comment back when the rise of P2P file swapping became an issue, saying, well, if artists aren't paid, they're not gonna create art.
Mm-hmm.
Artists, without being compensated, won't create art. Now, what we're seeing with YouTube and these other video resources is that statement is completely false. Artists are going to create whether they get paid or not. And some of the art is good. And now it's available. And I can sort it quite easily on viralvideo.com and get the index and just see the best of the best every single day. Well, so now you got these corporations who are slaves to Walmart that they're going to sell. You know, I talked to a movie executive yesterday. He said, I said, you guys are behind the ball because the rise of free content on the web is eating into, cannibalizing, eating your business. And you're saying, well, you know, all we care about is that Walmart in Middle America, every Tuesday, they go down there and see what's new, and they're buying them DVDs. Like, yeah, because America is 16th in broadband penetration in the world. The rest of the world's moving on.
Yeah, and their momentum is down.
So you want to give up the global market to keep selling DVDs at exorbitantly high prices to Middle America people in Walmart. That's their business plan, which is not a business plan at all.
Wow.
It's a plan, well, you know, I'm sure they'll weasel their way out of it one way or another.
Going to J.P. Morgan Chase for some derivatives.
They'll sell out to some hedge fund, of course, and then everyone will be happy. All right, honey.
Okay. Bye-bye.